that was what it's all about. It was like, man, so I can be social. I can engage with people, naturally just expand my social network, and it will lead to me making money one day. So
sign me up.
And I figured that, and it kind of made sense. And I was like, I know this will happen. I don't know how it will manifest itself, right? But I knew that there was a track there, and I wanted to see that through.
All right, so today we talked to a guy named Jordan Cole. Now, Jordan is a Memphis guy who grew up in a Christian environment, went to private school, then comes to Birmingham and goes to Sanford. His dad was a chiropractor, but he also tells about his business itch and his absolute fascination and love of sports. He goes into how sports helped him gamify his business and how the gamification of his business has set him up for success. Now, we take this episode and we go into two episodes. So part one, we're a little bit more of the of Jordan and how he grew up and what created him to be what he is. Part two, we go into more tactical things of infinite banking, finances in general, and at the end, leaving a legacy and how that the game of business is something that is helping people. Him going into a thought process of he's not selling anything. He is helping people go to the next step in their financial journey and how he wants to help generations to come. You're going to love this episode with Jordan Cole. Jordan, thanks so much for joining us today. So a little bit of background about Jordan. Jordan works for Nallen Associates. Previous guest, Justin Kraft, owns Nallen. You work with Justin. And then Mike Schwally, also previous guest. So you work really closely with those guys. Work in the insurance business, more specifically infinite banking. We will get to all that. But first, tell me about who you are, where you grew up, the 3 or 4 minute background of who Jordan Cole really is.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, man. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, went to private school.
Where'd you go?
ECS, Evangelical Christian School.
Yeah.
You know, there's one on every corner in Memphis. So it was
Memphis is not really Tennessee. Let me say this. Memphis is not really Tennessee. I lived in Tennessee for 11 years. Memphis is like its own state.
It's the Bermuda Triangle.
It is. It's so good.
Well, it is because it's Arkansas almost. It's North Mississippi. But, you know, I can crack on it because I'm from there. But right. People that live in North Mississippi, I was in a wedding this past 10 days ago, and the pastor was from North Mississippi, but he didn't want to be associated with Memphis, right? So they don't claim Memphis. And
you definitely
really
don't,
the whole state of Tennessee.
And you definitely don't claim Mississippi.
No. So it's a weird place. I guess the only link that I still have, you know, because I was born in 89. I was there until 2007. I came to Sanford in 08. And then I've been in Birmingham basically ever since.
Right.
But the one thing that kind of stays with me is my beloved Memphis Grizzlies, because they came in 2000. So 99-2000.
Right, you were a kid.
Yeah, yeah. So I would go to the games and got to see, you know, Kobe and Shaq and
that's awesome.
And T-Mac and all, you know, I think a little bit of Jordan. Yeah. I mean, when he was with the Warriors, you know. But it was so that was my Memphis background. Wanted to go to Tennessee. Have been a Tennessee fan my whole life. Still am. We just won a national title in baseball, so I'm like riding high.
Yeah.
And so for whatever reason, God said probably late April, early May, he said, no, you're going to go to Sanford. Because I was really back and forth. I'm obviously two totally different experiences.
Very.
You don't know what you want as a kid going to school. But went to Sanford and was ready to get the heck out of there after about a semester. It was just a really tough experience to be kind of on my own, challenging academically. Mm-hmm. I was doing so many extracurricular things. I was an athlete. I was pledge class president of the fraternity. I was doing, you know, SGA type stuff.
Right.
Like, I just kind of got overstimulated and overcommitted to try to like sink myself into it. And then ultimately said, you know what? I'm not going to leave. I'm going to give myself one more semester and then see. Cause that happens to a lot of people. They do a knee jerk reaction. And I'm thankful, so thankful that I did, because it blossomed into a marriage, a career, et cetera, here in Birmingham.
So tell me about your parents. Growing up, what did they do for a living?
My dad, I'm one of four. So yeah, I was the second born, and we are spaced out. My brother was born in 82. My youngest brother was born in 94. 93, 94. Yeah. So from start to finish, it was about 11 or 12 years there. My dad is a chiropractor, still is. He's 70, he says he wants to go for another 10 years.
He's still working on people?
Oh yeah.
Dude, yeah. That's so awesome.
Yeah. He says he wants to go, and he's great, in great shape. He wants to go for another 10, maybe 15 years. His mother is 92, 93. My grandmother, and she still works at the office. She's a nurse by trade.
What?
And she still works. Yeah, she works with him.
Your grandmother
in the clinic.
Works
yep.
for your dad in the office.
Oh, yeah. And she still treats him like a son, dude, which is hilarious. So
I love that. What about your mom?
My mother used to, she was in medical sales, and then she had four kids, and then that became the priority. It was getting us to and from wherever we needed to be and making sure we were trying to behave and all that stuff.
You had two absolute killers for parents.
Yeah, they're great people.
Well, just from a killer standpoint, because both of those are business owners.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what you say, medical sales, you own your own business.
Yeah.
Because you have to make the money. Like, there's a small salary on the front end, and after that, it's like commission only or very, very low.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So she did that. They met, you know, got married, and then had one kid, and then there was a gap. And then within the next 4 years, they had three more. So it's a lot, obviously, when you are just dealing with that many kids. So as I've become a parent, I'm more empathetic to that endeavor. But it was a great, great life growing up. Love my school. Love being involved. I think that was what drove me to Samford ultimately, because I had a Christian education from kindergarten through 12th grade. And I said, I would love to go, don't get me wrong, I'd love to go do the whole like big college thing. And then last second, I was like, I think there's something special about Samford in particular, or anything, any other college equivalent,
right,
where I could go and kind of really kind of throw myself into that experience.
Sure.
And so I'm so thankful I did and stuck it out.
So tell me about sports. So even before we got on camera, some sports.
What do you want to know? Yeah.
And you played some sports in college.
Yeah.
How did sports play a role in your life growing up?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I remember going to Titans camp when I was a kid, and this is another thing, you know, the Grizzlies came in, the Titans came in, like all these things came into the state, and it was formative years for me as a young man, and as a young man who just really gravitated to sports. I ended up going to Titans camp, and I get to see all like Eddie George and Derek Mason and Blaine Bishop and all these, like, you know, Titans that they played in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
The 99 Super Bowl.
Right.
And I remember, this is one thing, I remember just, I was so obsessed with sports, I would sit there and talk with some of the Titans players, and they nicknamed me ESPN. That's so just because I lived, I mean, every day I would wake up, I'd turn on ESPN.
SportsCenter. Me and you both.
You'd watch it so many times, it would loop through, so you'd see it like the fourth time through.
And you could start repeating what they're talking
about. You knew exactly where they were going, what highlight they were going to. So I just got obsessed with, I don't know what it was. And my dad, you know, like, he was for sure a big sports guy, but like, I just kind of branched out and took it to a different level. And so I connected on that level. I just got so excited with the pageantry, kind of the storylines, the personalities, the traditions of just any sport, you name it.
Yeah.
I was obsessed.
So football, anything, did you play anything other than football?
No, so my dad, remember, chiropractor, right?
Yeah.
Not going to be the biggest proponent of like a little skinny kid like me running around getting his brains beat in football. So he made a deal with me. I was a runner. I was a track athlete at Samford just for a brief moment. Nothing special, but I was pretty good at that. So that's what I did at school and college and in high school. But he told me, he said, you can play football if you can bench your weight and squat twice your weight. And I was like, okay. This was probably sixth or seventh grade.
Bench your weight and squat.
Correct. Twice your weight.
Double. Okay.
And you're not, and I'm not even working out really at like fifth, sixth, maybe starting at seventh grade.
Okay.
So it was one of those, okay, well, I'll go for that. And then by the time I got to that point, I was really into basketball and I was really into track. And I just really had no interest in playing football. I just liked it.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, man, I would love to have gone back and done that and played baseball. Never played baseball.
Yeah.
Because we were at the lake all summer. We had a lake house in Arkansas. We would go, my dad would finish seeing patients. We'd get there at like 1 a.m. because it was like 3.5 hours. We'd go to the lake all day Saturday, half day Sunday, pack up, come back home. And that's what we did in lieu of baseball. So it didn't matter what I was doing or not doing. I still just loved being a part of a team and competing. And it really just drove me, I think, eventually in business. Cause once I stopped competing, when I got to Samford, then I was like, well, what the heck do I do now?
Gotta have something to compete.
That's right.
So I'm gonna tell you a quick story. So a great friend of mine, Kendall Graveman, he pitches for the Astros now.
He's your age. He's 33, 34.
And
he had surgery back in January.
And he called last week. He's like, Coach, he said, I'm miserable. I'm like, what? He's like, I got to find something to compete in. Now, I'll say this. The last year and a half, 2 years, we've been doing a lot of real estate. But it's like the game of business is a slow developing.
Yeah, it's not one to be played very quickly.
It's not.
At all.
He's struggling. So the competitive nature is also something that we can go into here in a little bit, because I had the same thought, same mind as you did in that. So as you grew up, you got a parent that's a medical device, but stay-at-home mom. So she's got that DNA of medical business owner. You got a dad that's a chiropractor business owner.
And he's owned his practice now for, I think, 45 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
When someone asked you, hey, Jordan, what do you want to be when you grow up? What'd you say?
You know, you asked me that off camera, and I was drawing a blank, but now I remember it was a sportscaster. I wanted to be either a sports like journalist, or I wanted to be on TV breaking down what was happening, either in a play-by-play or color commentary role. That's what I wanted to do.
Okay,
so bad.
So you get to Samford, and what are you thinking you're going to do at Samford?
I did. I actually wrote for the school paper, so I was still trying to, you know, go that route. But this is the God component. Not only do I not go to Tennessee, I go to Samford. And Samford's first year to offer an entrepreneurship major was my freshman year at Samford, 2008. And I know I didn't want to be accounting. I know I didn't want to be like traditional finance, or at least I didn't feel super comfortable just jumping right into one of those little niches. And I said, I'll do entrepreneurship because that kind of fits who I am.
Sure.
Right? So
yeah.
I didn't know what that meant, especially since it was so new as a curriculum track.
That
This is 08.
So you're looking at probably 15 years ago. And like the draw and the romanticization, if that's even a word, of being an entrepreneur or a business owner.
Oh, you have no idea.
It was not there.
Yeah.
It was not there. And so you get to Samford.
Especially in 08.
Especially in 08. Yeah, exactly. When they're collapsing. So you get to Samford, you realize entrepreneurship. Tell me about the journey of like, what developed in those 4 years of like, this is what I really want to go do.
Mm-hmm. It became less about what and about who, who the people you want to be around. And that's what I think the university experience offers you. One time I told my dad, I think about this often, I'm like, man, I bet that made him really mad. But I told him, I said, I learned more from the fraternity that I was in than I did in any classroom, which I think is a little bit of a hyperbolic statement, of course.
But
the concept remained true. The sentiment was true, and it was genuine, because it's all tied to the people. And the connections that I made there ended up being the same connections that got me to Justin Kraft, to Charlie Nallen. Mm. I mean, it was just, you know, a circuitous journey that got me from some punk kid with a jacket that didn't fit right, you know, marching around as a pledge or whatever. And then all of a sudden, that was what it's all about. It was like, man, so I can be social. I can engage with people, naturally just expand my social network, and it will lead to me making money one day. So
sign me up.
And I figured that, and it kind of made sense. And I was like, I know this will happen. I don't know how it will manifest itself, right? But I knew that there was a track there, and I wanted to see that through.
So one of the things it sounds like you figured out, which I think is incredibly important, is not so much the tactical, this is exactly what I want to do, but you realized at a 20 years old-ish that people and having these relationships is what's going to propel you in life beyond college.
Well, it wasn't like an advantageous thing. It was more of, this is what I'm good at. I'm not good at much, but I'm good at like talking to people, and I love people.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking offline about like, I'm jealous that you're a reader. Mm-hmm. I'm not a reader.
Yeah.
I love the idea of being a reader.
Exactly.
You know, but I look at it as like, well, that's just less time that I get to engage with people. Because I'm sitting there with my nose in a book, right? Yeah. I'd rather go talk to my wife or be with my kids or go and like have a beer with a buddy or catch up with someone over lunch.
Sure.
And so I know that those are not it's not a binary decision, but at the same time, it just magnifies for me the yearning in my gut, the opportunity that I saw coming out of school and getting into business in some capacity was, A, it's going to be about people.
Right.
I was actually doing half of my college career. I was doing business and I was doing all my pre-chiropractic coursework. So I was killing myself. I would go from accounting class and sprint across campus to go to chemistry lab. And those time frames didn't line up because they're totally different colleges, right?
Correct.
So I was doing that type of stuff, and people are looking at me like I'm crazy. And then my dad, I remember, told me this one time during the summer. This was probably 2010, so about halfway through college. He said, look, he said, if you want to help people, go to chiropractic school. There's nothing wrong. I'd love to have you come back to Memphis and work. My older brother had just started with him. It was all set up for that to kind of, you know, work itself out. Yeah. And then, but he said, if you want to make money, like really make money, just sell something. Go sell something. Learn how to sell something. And I was like, okay. And there was a lot, this was Obamacare was coming in. Yeah. There was a lot of questions around what effect that would have on insurance reimbursements, especially for people like chiropractors. And I mean, there was just a lot of kind of up in the air. And I remember one thing, I'm a little bit of a control freak. I don't want someone to tell me what I can or can't make, especially if I'm my own business, but I'm really not, you know, I don't want legislative action to be dictating what I can and can't do.
Correct.
At least without the ability to pivot. And so that was a big step to get, okay, I know that I like people. I know that I want to engage with people. I have no idea how I'm going to make money, but I knew that if you really want to make a lot of money in this world, then just learn to sell something, right?
So there was an interesting quote. Someone asked, a college kid asked Warren Buffett this question. This was probably 15 years ago. And the question was asked, it said, if you could give us one piece of advice on how to succeed in life, what would it be? Very open-ended question. But here's the first thing Warren said. He said, if you really want to be successful in life, take as many courses and learn as much as you can about how to sell and interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether you're selling insurance, whether you're selling IBC, whether you're selling real estate, whether you're selling chiropractics, whether you're selling your 7-year-old to go to bed, you're always selling. I am selling an idea to my wife currently that we need to paint the garage at the lake.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive. She doesn't get it. But I know from an aesthetic standpoint, from a business standpoint, that we need to do that because we rent the place out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more inviting to see a beautiful building as opposed to a gray doldrums cinder block building.
Right.
And so I'm always selling. That is the key with the food stuff that we do. It's like the other, not great example. We're sitting there Saturday night and we did the official visit meals for the football team at Alabama.
Oh, great.
So we're doing all the food. There's 120 people in the room. And me and Sierra sat there for probably an hour after the event. And we sat and talked to the girl that's in charge of the stadium and where they do events. And I just asked questions. And we loved on her and leaned into her. Because I know if I can get people to understand that we deliver a high service, we're very personable, we'll deliver what we say we will, that will lead to other business down the road. That's what I'm good at. I'm a good cook, but I'm not a great cook. I got a guy in there named Jonathan who's an unbelievable chef, can cook way better than I can. Where I've figured out, just like you, is that me getting in front of people and talking to people is where I can create wealth.
And it costs.
It does.
Nothing. It costs your time.
It costs my time. And I know.
And the return is infinite, right?
I know that my staff sometimes looks at me and goes, you never do anything. Like, I promise I am working all the time.
That's right.
Because I'm meeting with people and being with people.
Yeah.
So you graduate from Sanford, walking off the stage of graduation. What do you go do?
Two things come to mind. One was working at Two Men in a Truck while in college. So I mean, this was the summer before I graduated.
Okay.
So it flows into this stuff.
Yep.
That summer, and I remember just hearing, hey, you know what? If you want to make some money, and it's hard work, but it's good money. And I was, you know, at that point of in time, I was playing rugby. I was working out. I played for the Birmingham Vulcans here. Speaking of, as soon as my career ended, back to a previous conversation with track, I became a basketball coach for Oak Mountain High School, like, you know, an assistant.
Yeah.
And because I love basketball, it's my kind of my first love when it comes to just what I have the best IQ of. Like, I love it. Yeah. And then I said, okay, well, I need that scratched my competitive itch for a little bit. And then I pivoted to rugby and played rugby for a long time. Mm-hmm. Well, at that moment, I was in such good shape. I was like, I'm going to go move furniture. And so I did that for the summer going into my senior year.
Yeah.
And then I got that job out of school, which was basically like a management training track with a company called Defender Direct. They're an ADT retailer.
Okay.
Right? So they've since been bought by ADT, but they were an awesome company in Indianapolis, high quality, really focused on the people. And they wanted young, you know, half smart kids that knew what they were doing, that had an ambitions on being leaders in that company, and kind of put them through a fast track management program. So I got that job in Indianapolis. When I was interviewing for that job, I did very little to speak of my time at Samford and my education and what my degree was worth and all that, all the education that I had. I probably spent more time, about 60 or 70% of my interview, talking about my job working for two men in a truck, moving furniture.
Wow.
Because that experience is just so, I mean, if you talk to anybody, they have a bad experience with moving furniture, right? It's just awful, right? And I had to just look at that and assess, I've got a full summer of this. I have two options here. I can just get through it, or I can look at it and say, I'm going to find a way to gamify this. Mm. I'm going to make this fun.
Okay.
And I just leaned into it. And so I would work with, you know, UAB football players that worked there and stuff. And I would try to get them on the same mental level as me. And all of a sudden I looked around and it wasn't anything I was doing that was special. I was just trying to find a way to get through this. But what impact it had was it raised the level of our approach to something that would otherwise be viewed as really sucky, right? And it's hot, it's miserable. And so all that being said, those two experiences, doing something as simple as, you know, moving furniture from sunup to sundown 6 days a week, to getting this job out of school where I was driving around Indianapolis, rural Indianapolis or Indiana in general,
yeah.
And I was putting in security systems just to learn the business and then work my way up. And I was, you know, moved to Jackson, Mississippi. I got my own branch. We took our branch from last to first. I just tried to take these concepts and try to, and we can talk about that in a minute, but all of that was really great for me to learn a lot of good things. But what I learned that has stuck with me the most and put me on the path that I am today with Nowlin was I cannot be in a corporate management structure. That's just not going to be the case. Cause I would tweak something about our systems, right? We were the crappiest branch in the whole country.
In Jackson.
Jackson, Mississippi. So again,
Jackson, Mississippi.
It's close enough to Memphis where I can dump on Mississippi too.
That's right.
Because I'm from there. Yeah. So don't take offense, people. So, but that was the experience that I had to go from worst to first. And they would say, well, it's working, but that's not the process that the corporate office said that you need to follow. And that's where I would say, well, who cares? We're succeeding.
I helped you guys win.
That's right. And so that's when I realized I either get out now or I'm going to get sucked into this system and chase that carrot for a long time.
So how did you get out of, because I mean, obviously you had success,
but yeah,
you
realized, oh yeah.
Even with success, you realized that this was not for you. So what was the next step after working for the security company?
All right. So moved back to Birmingham, because being away from Birmingham just for that period of time made me realize that I wanted to be here.
Okay.
I wanted to raise my family here. I was engaged at the time. My wife was finishing at Samford. She was a year behind me. So it was, we're either going to move to Mississippi, live together, and we're going to work for this company because we're getting married regardless that summer. Or I'm moving back to Birmingham and figuring XYZ out. I chose door number two.
Okay.
And so then I met with a mentor of mine who actually got me the first job. I basically sat with him at breakfast and said, all right, a year later, the first one worked. I'm back though. I want to be in Birmingham. What else you got for me? And then he looked at me, he said, actually, I mean, he knew my personality.
Yeah.
He said, there's this group, Nowlin and Associates, and they do this thing called Infinite Banking. And it's the only time I've ever heard a financial strategy pitched to me where I was ready to get my wallet out and write a check. So, and then that, from that moment on, I was like, well, let's go down that route.
Okay. So there's a big fascination these days, and I get asked this twice a month, with having a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
But I see a lot of times when people, quote, sign up for a mentor, it doesn't work. Who was your mentor,
mm-hmm.
and how did you meet this person?
I've had several.
The one I'm talking about.
Yeah, at different stages of life, which to your point, I don't think it can be inorganic. It has to be a natural thing, right? This person, this was Justin Harris, who's a great guy. He'd founded a company called Fire Seeds.
Yeah.
Right?
Birmingham.
Yeah. I was one of their first placements from Fire Seeds, him and Cord Sachs. Great people. Still talk to him to this day.
Yeah.
And they placed me with Defender Direct because Justin had worked there. And then when he started the company, they said, hey, can you go find us some top talent? And so when I circled back with him, I said, plug me in somewhere else. And he's like, look, I know your countenance. I know your abilities. I know your personality. I think you need to look into this. And not to jump ahead, but he came back again and said, after a few months of me starting in the very difficult life insurance / financial planning business at 23 years old, where all my friends and peers were just as broke as I was, right? And I said, Justin, I think I'm going to get a job somewhere else and just make some money for a while. And then I'll jump back in here. He said, if you do that, you will never come back.
He's right.
And
Justin Kraft or Justin?
This was Justin Harris.
Justin Harris.
I mean, Justin Kraft's told me that plenty of times over the years too.
You go to work for, so you get introduced to Justin Kraft.
Yep. Justin and Charlie.
And so how did that transpire?
I mean, it's kind of laughably simple. Recruiting to this business, as I've found out over the years, is hard, really hard. I mean, it's a pretty tough sales pitch. You know, come and work for us with no guarantees to make any money, and you have to work your butt off, and maybe in 10 years you'll have something to show for it.
That's a hard sell.
I mean, that's a hard sell, right? So, but when I was just young and dumb enough and crazy enough to say, I like Charlie, I like Justin, I like the strategy that I would, the story that I would get to tell, going back to people, right?
Yeah.
If I can engage with people and just share a story about what Infinite Banking has to offer, not selling them a product, but just what the strategy can represent and what solutions it can represent, I can see a path there. And so I interviewed one time or two, maybe two times. And I was like, yeah, when do I start? Let's do it. Wow. You know, he offered me the job and I was like, you know, I had to go get licensed and all that type of stuff, but that took a month or two. And then so once that was done, it was sell a couple things and you get on contract and then, you know, the ball starts rolling from there.